This is Nachyomi Yehoshua, chapter 11. When the king of Hatzor hears about the military and territorial advances of Bnei Israel, he reaches out to form an alliance with the other kings of the northern areas of Canaan in order to put a stop to this approaching army of Israel that threatens all of them. Hashem reassures Yehoshua that he has no reason to worry. He'll be able to defeat all of these enemies that rise up against him. Hashem also tells Yehoshua that when he does prevail in the conflict, he should burn all of the chariots of the enemies and hamstring all of the horses. It seems like this extreme measure was taken because there was a temptation on the part of the Jews to take these vehicles, these chariots, and to take these horses and to use them in future battles in the style of Mitzrayim or in the style of the other Canaanite nations or the surrounding nations. This was a common fashion of warfare to use these chariots and horses. And in order to distance themselves from these customs, they destroyed the vehicles, as it were, of the enemy armies. In any case, rather than waiting for this alliance of kings to make the first move, Yehoshua decides on a preemptive strike, and in this surprise attack, he follows Hashem's instructions to the letter, destroying the chariots, maiming the horses. He then goes to Hatzor, which was the home base, the home city of the king who initiated this entire attack and conflict. And he destroys the city and burns it to the ground, keeping only the spoils of war for his soldiers and their families. Then Yehoshua moves to each of the home cities of the remaining kings who were involved in the conflict, and he captures each of the cities, taking all of the spoils as well. However, the only city that was burnt to the ground was the city of Hatzor, seemingly because they were the initiators of the entire episode. Two points are important here. First of all, the Navi mentions that unlike the conquest of the southern cities of Israel, the north took many days for Yehoshua to conquer. The rabbis interpret this, and it's quoted in Rashi here in the Perek, that they interpret this as a negative statement about Yehoshua, a criticism of Yehoshua, that he prolonged the conquest. Why did he prolong the conquest? Because he had the sense that as soon as his task was fulfilled, as soon as he completed his mission, he would die. And therefore, he didn't want to end his life prematurely, or what he thought of as prematurely, so he dragged the conflict out longer than necessary. Little did he know that his lack of zeal, his reluctance to fully settle the Jewish community in their land as quickly as possible, had far-reaching implications, the impact of which would continue to be felt even centuries after his death, because the conquest and the settlement would never quite be completed in the manner that it was originally envisioned, because Yehoshua did not see through his task to the end as quickly and efficiently as he had been expected to. A second important point here is that the Navi mentions in this chapter that none of the cities or nations in Canaan made peace with the Jews, except for the people of Gibeon, the Gibeonim. And that this was the reason why they were all destroyed by Yehoshua's army. The implication is that Yehoshua held out the possibility of peace and offered the option of peace to all of these nations and all of these cities and all of these kings. And that the fact that the Jews captured these cities in such a strikingly violent and shocking manner, and the reason why all of the inhabitants have to be killed, and the reason for all of this seemingly wanton destruction inflicted on these on the inhabitants of Canaan by the Jews is only because they refused to come to terms of peace with the Jewish people. But that was not the first choice. This supports what the Rambam and many other commentaries say, that the Jewish army never went to attack without first opening up peace negotiation or offering the possibility of peace, that if these nations would accept the seven commandments of Noah, the Noahide laws upon themselves, and would agree not to engage in idolatry, or if they would simply vacate their space, that the Jews would not have destroyed them. There was no genocidal intention here. The Rambam says, in fact, even with the war of Amalek, even against Amalek, the Jews are obligated to try initiate peace negotiations with them before attacking them. And the Pesukim in our chapter certainly support that view, the concept being that for us, war is never the first course of action. Violence is against our nature. We prefer to settle any dispute and to accomplish our objectives in constructive, peaceful, and harmonious ways. This was a one-time event. The land had to be purified from idolatry so that the nation of Hashem could establish itself without the influence of paganism or idolatrous ideas and idolatrous customs. Unfortunately, this required a removal of the people who were involved in those activities and who promoted those beliefs. And without their cooperation, they had to be eliminated by force. But ideally, the preferred course of action would have been for the indigenous people of Canaan to come to peaceful terms with the Jews, to either accept the seven commandments of Noah upon themselves, or to allow the Jews to take the land that had been promised to them by Hashem. Under no circumstances do we view it as ideal to kill or to certainly to eliminate all of the inhabitants of any city. But the concept, the vision, the dream of having a holy nation in the land of Israel could only be achieved in an area that was cleared completely of idolatry. And unfortunately, under the circumstances, there was no way to achieve this without resorting to some measure of violence.